examine with you some of the prospects and opportunities that I think lie before us, with special emphasis towards the latter half of my own experiences at the State University. First of all, I think once even a small amount of information about the drastic needs of souls outside of the established Catholic school system are recognized, I believe our imagination and the inspiration of the Spirit will tell us what to do. First, at the beginning, in favor of the preschool child, even though the child does come to a Catholic school, but certainly if he does not, those of you that are in educational psychology will bear me out in saying that those years between the cradle and school are the most formative and important of a person's life. I know that universities are doing far more than most Catholic colleges in preschool psychology. It seems to me we should, especially, say, in our high schools, where many of the girls finish their education, don't go on into college, and surely in college, both courses and programs to better equip the future mother and father, especially the mother, to know how to train the child along spiritual and moral lines. And among the principles that I think is valid is the fact that way before the age of reason comes the age of love, that a child's emotions and volitional response seems to anticipate, sometimes by years, the rational faculty. And that consequently, the example of mother and dad, their attitude towards things, those subtle things which are almost incommunicable by word of mouth, a child somehow absorbs attitude towards things. Recently, for example, I worked on a monograph for a person who was working on preschool sex psychology. And it's remarkable what depth of character can be developed right there in the right attitude, say, towards the reproductive faculties in that young child. This whole area, in other words, anticipating that so many of the young people will eventually not go to Catholic schools, to help the parents train the children where they, the laity, in the spirit of the Vatican Council, can do what we couldn't possibly do. Then on the elementary school level, while a number of sisters, as you know so well, over the years have been generously giving their time on Saturdays and Sundays to teaching the children going to public schools, I think it should be continued as far as time would allow. On the other hand, I think we should more closely look to a greater efficiency. I'm thinking particularly in terms of training specialized laity, and let's be sure that part of our college education, at least, is the training of some very good lay catechists, men and women, part of whose course structure. Now, do you have any courses, may I ask, rhetorically if necessary, in, say, the teaching of religion on the college level, credit courses? Now, if you don't, whether they're courses, whether they are seminars, but I think to train our young people for a need that is becoming more and more grave in the church, so that while we spend a certain amount of time in teaching the children directly, often, as a matter of fact, the lay people can do more with them than we. For one thing, they see us so seldom. You see, they've been exposed to a purely secular teaching situation. We come along, we somehow obtrude on their atmosphere. We are strange, or as some tell me, we are queer. Therefore, the training of lay catechists from our earliest days, that is, training them already in grammar school, to teach them what I don't think we have received enough of in our own schooling, namely the apostolic dimension of the Catholic life. Not merely what to teach, first of all, what to believe, but what to teach. The whole field of communication among our youngsters, and especially in high school and college. Then, as I think I mentioned before, and I will re-insist and emphasize, if possible, put a frame around, sisters, a community as large as yours, with a talent that I know you have, having been taught by and having seen you people in operation. I'm not flattering you when I say you are intelligent. With your training, with your spirit, you should do far more writing. This is just a matter of fact. You hate to use the word unproductive because you are so highly productive in the field of teaching. Now, this is something we can learn from the secular educational field. I know many teachers who don't write. I mean those that are secular teachers. But by and large, there is an emphasis on publication, on writing, in secular school that we don't experience. You then, I would strongly urge you, and here I can say as one who is at least a little better informed than about perhaps other things that I may not know so much about, I have certainly spent endless hours in writing. A simple fact like you're preparing a lecture, a course, for example, or needn't be anything so sophisticated. The way you approach, you teach a subject. Maybe as simple a thing as spelling or as complex a thing as, say, higher mathematics. Notice what we said when we spoke about Catholic education on an institutional level being a collective witness to Christ, the wisdom of God in the world. Well, the same thing obtains in terms of our communicating what we know in terms of writing, and as a consequence, having what we write read by those who are more immediately in contact with the students or by the children themselves. Do write, sisters. And if there's more freedom needed, I don't know where you need to look for it, if you need it, by all means, urge, ask, petition, and if need be, pray that you be given the time and opportunity to write. In other words, we simply multiply our effectiveness. How often I've told myself, I spend, as you do for a single talk, depending on the nature of the speech, how complex it is, I spend 10, 15 hours in preparing a good lecture, say a public talk. The same amount of time, add a few hours perhaps, polishing the language, structuring the logic, typing it out, it's published, 1,000, 10,000. First book I published, it sold over 50,000 copies. The hours you spend in preparing what we communicate by word of mouth are hours that can be multiplied in effectiveness. Now, this is something which, of course, has to be thought through in the top echelons of the community. On the other hand, all the encouragement from your superiors will be meaningless unless you want to write. And it's always well to remind ourselves that we would be nowhere, sisters, as Christians, unless the evangelist and Saint Paul had gone to the trouble of writing. And incidentally, to me, it's almost a miracle. In an age, I mean, A.D. 37 time, when most of the world, 97, 98% of the world, was utterly illiterate. To have actually sat down and written what practically nobody could read. Talk about the inspiration. That's inspiration of the Holy Spirit with a vengeance. Anticipating a culture, to wit, our own, when the majority of people, certainly in our civilization, can read. In other words, we are way past the age when the only way to communicate ideas is by speaking. It's just a matter of fact. And consequently, we communicate ideas also by writing. Do write, sisters. Well, let me remove the exhortative, the imperative. Write. still on the elementary school level, the business of cooperating with public school teachers, I think, is imperative. When we talk about the ecumenical movement, we will bring this in too. To me, it seems the ecumenical movement has its most prospective opportunities for the future in the field of education. We have simply not made ourselves known, nor are they known to us, ways in which, particularly in terms of encouraging people to go into the teaching in public schools. Now again, we may be selfishly fearful we're not getting enough for our own Catholic schools. Let's stop worrying. God will bless our Catholic schools to get all the teachers we need if we also think of those other millions of souls who don't have any teacher, who has perhaps any faith. In this connection, and this refers to both the elementary and the high school level, I'd like to share with you an experience that I've had with the CTA. Ever hear about it? CTA of Brooklyn, New York. The organization was founded by the late Bishop Molloy of Brooklyn. Bishop Molloy sensed, years before this modern movement came on the scene, that with so many Catholic children in public schools, and indeed so many children from parents who have the faith in these public institutions, something should be done to ensure that the teaching profession in public schools is a believing profession. The single gravest need of public education, and this has been my bread and butter for over a dozen years, is competent teachers, always of course, but teachers who have principles, teachers who have values, teachers who have a faith. It is an open sesame of opportunities. Consequently, the CTA, Catholic Teachers Association, was organized in the East, with a current membership in the Diocese of Brooklyn alone of over 6,000 Catholics in public schools. But that took years to develop, and the Sisterhoods of Brooklyn cooperated. For example, suggesting from early high school days that some of their students go into education, into teaching. By the time they were finishing high school, they were approached by members of the CTA, scholarships are available, study programs worked out for them, teaching positions assured, and the result is that often the cream of the crop of those, say, who don't have religious or priestly vocations are insured for this most important apostolate. I spoke to their national convention at the St. George Hotel some time ago. 2,600 people crowded the ballroom. Every available square foot was filled, all with Catholic teachers in universities, high schools, and grammar schools. And in large measure, I have been assured, because the Catholic schools in the city, through the sisters mainly, cooperated in encouraging young people to go into this divinely inspired vocation of teaching. Because you may be sure, without proselytizing, no question of that. But while using their heads, all the prudence at their disposal, yet being men and women of deep faith, when they teach whatever they teach, they will certainly leave the impress of people who have the faith, and as a consequence, children, both Catholic and others, can do nothing but profit from exposure to that kind of a mind. Now on the high school level, the one thing I should especially encourage you to do, and this is a kind of a liaison between the high school and the college, is to be sure that the students attending our high schools are prepared for the secular life that awaits them, especially if they go to secular colleges. First of all, the needs here are fantastic. When I spoke of those 1,600 secular colleges with less than 250 full-time priests, most of them pastors, few of them academically inclined, men way overworked can't begin to cope with the situation. I was at the University of Wisconsin, for example, 2 months ago. 6,000 Catholics, one full-time chaplain. What to do then to prepare all our students from high school to, first of all, not suffer, and even to profit from a secular higher education? First, I suppose, some knowledge. I always come back to that. Some knowledge of what's going on. Our high school should be well equipped with catalogs and information about all the major universities of the country, both Catholic and secular. And if need be, we've got to ask God to enlighten us so that we lose some of the prejudices about secular higher education. You can always pick up bizarre stories about the latest escapade or crime committed on a secular campus. But frankly, we don't always have to go to secular universities to find that, as I think some of you teachers at Notre Dame College will bear me out. Of course, there is sin and infidelity on those campuses, and no doubt proportionately, it is perhaps greater and greater given the tens of thousands attending, given often the low level of moral principle of so many of the students. However, we can learn that there are marvelous faculty members on those campuses, that there are thousands of students, for example, to illustrate these four vocations. Those two men that I mentioned who are entering the Franciscans, both MAs as of this June, were daily communicants in graduate school. Now that's hardly what you do in Babylon. They're not all bad. So a certain sympathy, and going to some trouble to find out what is good about these schools. A book that every teacher in high school ought to read is a little paperback by William Whalen, Catholics on Campus. Have you read it, sisters? Do read it. It's written by a Catholic teacher at Purdue, a good friend of mine. Father of five children. He is university editor for Purdue University. We have been close to each other ever since he began writing. In fact, before he published his first book, we spent a day together. So a sympathetic attitude, availability of information, so that we are informed, but then also that the students in our high schools, especially in the last 2 years, inasmuch as so many, and in some Catholic high schools the majority, go to secular colleges. I gave the commencement talk at St. Philip's High School in Battle Creek, Michigan, a couple of weeks ago, and I was given a breakdown by the principal. I think 82% were going to secular colleges. And one thing that is especially critical is the fact that community colleges, including Cleveland, are developing. They have found these huge monoliths, universities of 30 and 40,000, are top-heavy. And consequently, the future of secular education will be mainly community college education, which offers tremendous opportunities for us. But we've got to be on the ball. We've got to know what's going on. Therefore, first, a sympathetic attitude, but also information for our students, which can come in a variety of ways, to find out who are the Catholics teaching on those faculties. You'll be surprised at the number and their caliber. High-minded men and women, thoroughly dedicated to their profession, and often very fine spiritual people. The head of a department, for example, at Western Michigan, last year became a Benedictine Oblate, a daily communicant. A hard, two-fisted pedagogue, but a thoroughly good Catholic. And sometimes the facade may deceive us. There's a savoir-faire about him. There's a certain off-handedness which may grate. But many are solid underneath. Have them talk to our students. And I don't mean just a periodic talk. Again, please not just what dangers they've got to face on campus. They can always read the Sunday supplement of almost any standard American newspaper to find that. Sex on campus, at least once in 2 weeks, at least one article in every Sunday supplement, I think, in the nation. They don't have to be told much about that. But, for example, helps to prepare their curriculum, to plan what courses of studies they want. If need be, even seminars. I would even go so far as to suggest a course, an elective or two, in a Catholic high school on how to get the most out of college. Why not? These young people coming to college are not helped with registration now for 6 semesters at the state university. Babes in the woods, they don't know what to do. So what do? We have a fence, a wooden fence between the registration, which is the gymnasium, and 30 counselors sitting at 30 tables, and this mob of humanity, most of which doesn't know a thing about college. Where do we start? How much we can do and how grateful they would be to us if we help to orientate them for college so it would not be what it is for most of them, such a traumatic experience. And incidentally, they would discover what, of course, is true. We're interested not only either having memorized the catechism or gotten A's in religion. We're interested in them as human beings, which means in their academic life, in the courses they're going to take, in the majors they're going to follow, in being sure they get the good teachers. It means that we ourselves become familiar. And I speak as one walking on thin ice with the situations on these campuses. Sisters should be seen in secular university halls. Now, they may stare at you for a while. I know a number of you are taking courses at these universities. But that should be only the beginning. There are ways in which all sorts of things, I'm speaking still on the high school level, things can be done to prepare our students to enter secular university life and not suffer that danger to their faith, which we are so afraid of, and I think often rightly, because they come unequipped. Our Catholic high school should have active alumni or alumni, that's pronunciation, associations. And those associations should not mainly sponsor teas or bridges or take collections. They should mainly be concerned for the academic and spiritual welfare of the alumni or the alumni. And one of the finest things that sisters can do, now you say you don't have time, and I'm not here to explain how you're going to find the time, but I do suggest that given the willingness, people if need be will be given the time, and surely the laity can always be used, so that high school alumni associations will keep in touch with these people. When they step, believe me, when they step into a secular college, most of them have completely been cut off, and I use the passive voice, have been cut off from their Catholic associations. Many are cut off from their parishes, for one thing, because all year, for example, 2 full semesters, and all for working during the summers, they never go back to their parish. It's a brand new life for them. And what I think a lot of people don't realize, the vast majority of students now attending secular colleges, it is becoming more true, I noticed, for example, your own dormitories, The vast majority are living 24 hours a day on university property, which means they're living a life completely separated from their past associations. To sustain that contact is indispensable. To keep in correspondence, for example, through English classes, between your students who are seniors and students who are in these universities. And in parish schools, the interest of the whole parish in this work. Now on the college level. Now here, if I allowed myself free rein, you wouldn't leave before dinner. The needs and the opportunities for involvement by religious, trained religious, on secular university campuses are myriad. I believe that every religious community, professionally in teaching like your own, should seriously think, if it is not doing so already, to begin at least to train some of its personnel for doing this kind of a work. Where souls are, we must be. And that formula, I think, is safe. What kind of work to be done? Evidently, the kind of work that is available. I know at least 5 universities right now, and if your mother provincial would want the names, I would be happy to give her the names, who would hire Catholic sisters as counselors to Catholic university students, would build property for them, would insure them a permanent chaplain, the counseling field for women is endless. And in many ways, it's especially the girls on these campuses that need counseling. It isn't that men don't need it too, but that so often, women are not quite sure why they came to college, because for most of them, it's not vocational. In other words, the average man nowadays, with any brains about him, knows he's got to go to college to make anything of himself. Often girls are going to school because perhaps their parents want at least some college graduates in the family. Or maybe the mother went to college. The girls need counseling. The amount of good that can be done by the sisters directly, or in this I would stress, by what are called, what do you call them? House mothers? Directresses, all kinds of fancy names they get. They do yeoman work on these campuses. They are well paid. They are sought for. They are badly needed. There are very few Catholic laymen available. If we did nothing else but furnished, say, in the next year, 1 dozen, better still 100, well-qualified Catholic women to be hired by universities, and jobs are constantly open, they would do a tremendous amount of good for the souls of 300 to 450 girls in a single residence hall. The dorm mother sets the pace. If it is true in a Catholic college, it is infinitely true in a secular university. But not only for counseling, but also for teaching. Often, sisters who go to secular universities, I'm confident this has been verified in your community and is in most others, they receive invitations to go back and teach. How can we? Sister, you're being ready to teach in Notre Dame College. Well, I'm not making suggestions to higher superiors. I'm merely suggesting that maybe the Holy Spirit might inspire. Last December, I received a letter from Beloit College in Wisconsin, one of the finest liberal arts colleges in the country, asking if it were possible to get a Jesuit to teach on the faculty. Teach straight Catholic theology, nothing else. Had a starting salary of $8,500 for 12 hours. That's Madison, Wisconsin, or rather it's in Wisconsin, not Madison, Beloit. Contacted our provincial, of course. It was beyond our jurisdiction. Rode around, called around, made a special trip to Milwaukee to confer with the Wisconsin provincialate. Nobody available. Just before Lent, I got a letter from the dean telling me that they couldn't wait any longer, so they hired one more Protestant for the faculty from Princeton University. And I'm sure he was not sarcastic when he said this. He said, I suppose in 10 years we'll be able to do business. Miami University in Florida wanted to hire a Catholic priest, full-time, full-scale, for the fall. They cannot get him. We ourselves can make ourselves available. I admit we do not now have available personnel to undercut existing colleges. I do think, if nothing else, even one person in the community who is exposed to this experience will have learned and hopefully will have communicated to other members of the community something that is absolutely priceless. I have learned more honestly about the needs of the church and of the potential in the teaching apostolate in my 3 years at the State University than I had in the previous 15 years as a priest. Then, obviously, we have the opportunity, in fact, I would say the obligation, of teaching well-qualified students in our colleges to themselves go into teaching in secular universities. The salary scale is good. Openings all around. Western Michigan has a legislature option of an increase automatically of 1,000 students each year. Just take on 1,000 more. Last year they turned away 3,000. They need teaching personnel right and left. Heads of departments, I've been flying back and forth by plane between Chicago and Kalamazoo all last semester, 2, 4, sometimes 6 times a week. And as a consequence, I'd often be flying with men from various departments from the university. Going in all parts of the country, scouting up teachers. They want them. We are fortunately at Western Michigan getting a lay Catholic theologian, the first in the country, to teach at a state university with a starting salary of $10,000 to teach straight Catholicism. But those people have got to be trained. They must be well qualified. And you know where we got him? You never guess. We had to go to Germany to find him. He just got his doctorate this June from the University of Mainz. He spent about 10 years in the United States, off and on, married an American girl, speaks English well, but his whole background is European. These are not opportunities. These are obligations, sisters. The overall picture on university campuses throughout the country, I'm told, is about 7% Catholics on the faculties, although the Catholic student body nationally is almost 25%. And the main reason for that is that Catholics, coming as we are out of the catacombs, are hungry for a higher education. They are flooding universities, and they are simply not being met by men and women who share their own religious convictions, who should be there by all the rights of a democratic society. But who's going to train them? Our Catholic colleges should be the nurseries for training men and women. And when I've heard of a small diocese, cut off from a larger diocese within the last 4 years, they didn't have a Catholic college in this small, really just kind of a sidearm of a diocese. So what happened? They figured they must have a Catholic college, so they're going to have a Catholic college. So they ran a campaign for 5 million. The present enrollment is just a little over 200, with a faculty and administration of over 30. It's a question of reassessment of our available manpower, of the amount of money that Catholics have, and to ask ourselves the hard, searching questions of the future, not so distant future, when the needs, especially of the intellectual Catholic Americans, will have to be met in campuses other than ours. Now I would like to share with you, to illustrate this last dimension, about the opportunities on secular college campuses, something of my own experience at the State University. This I did not give this morning at Chardon. I just want to tell you briefly something about what happened there, and I trust it will be at least informative, and I hope a bit inspirational. The background goes to 1957 and 58, when I was hired by the Association of Colleges for Teacher Education as a consultant. There were three of us: a Protestant from Chicago Divinity School, a Jew from New York, and a Catholic, myself, from West Baden, to be consultants for the association, which was spending over $250,000 over a period of 5 years to study this simple question: what can we do to raise the religious literacy of the American teaching profession? Now, this association is of hard-bitten educators. Does Notre Dame College belong to the association, the AACTE? It does. At any rate, this association, under this substantial grant, began to study what could be done with teachers' colleges throughout the country and departments of education. And their concern was one that should bother us. They felt incorrectly that most of the teachers graduating from secular colleges, which means the majority, are ill prepared to communicate the values of our Judeo-Christian culture, quite apart from whether that culture is valid, apart from whether you fully believe in it. But de facto, we do have Milton, Shakespeare, and the rest of them. And the reason they were ill-equipped to communicate those values from the first years of elementary grades through graduate school was simply they had little or no religion themselves. What to do? And the problem, of course, was complicated by the nature of secular education, especially state education. How can you teach religion in a state university? And yet they felt, unless we get some of this into the minds of future teachers, the millions of students they teach will never get it. 15 universities were used as pilot schools, among which was Western Michigan. The national coordinator for the project was Dr. Seabury, placement director for Western. We became close friends. The net result of those 5 years of study was that recommendations were made to schools of education, and among the schools that took the priority recommendation was Western, which started a whole department of religion, a state university, the first in the nation. Full-fledged department of religion, no holds barred, directly contrary to the Constitution of the State of Michigan, which says, no sectarianism shall be taught in any state institution. And this was religion to be taught in a state institution. Fortunately, the president of the university is a man of rich political experience. The department was organized in 58. In 62, or by 61, 62, they decided they must have a Catholic, if nothing else, at least, to create a good image before the public. If they are teaching religion, and Catholicism is a religion, they only have Catholicism. They scouted around, and I was invited to join the faculty. My starting salary was $8,800. My salary this past year was $9,600. My salary next year for the full year will be $10,200. As my provincial tells me, we are making money on you. First, the two-year contracts renewed for 1 year, now just renewed for two more years. It is still highly experimental. But as far as I am concerned, it has been highly successful. If nothing else, it has been most informative. In fact, I am finishing a book, I hope this summer, which I'm calling The Unknown Generation, based on my students' confidences to me, where I want to share, I hope, with thousands of educators, how these young people think, what spiritual ambitions and ideals they have, and what duty society has to answer to those aspirations. I have been teaching about 9 different courses in my 3 years. One of the conditions for my hire, which may be symbolic, is that I would teach, besides Catholicism, something else. Fortunately, I had something of a background in something else. I have therefore been teaching the Eastern religions, mainly Buddhism and Hinduism. I have been teaching courses in modern American religion, notably Protestantism and American Judaism, with many Jewish students. One of the delightful stories I'd like to tell you, a year ago, one of my Jewish students, after I gave a quiz on Judaism, flunked it miserably. He must have written his mother, because she called me up from Chicago, and she says, Maury does not know that I'm calling you up. He tells me that he failed the test that you gave on Judaism. I'm so embarrassed. Here I've been trying to do the best for my boy, and what does he do? He fails in his own religion. Now she suggested, if you get close to Maury, don't tell him I called you up. If you get close to him, you find out he's more intelligent than he looks. I'm sure he will improve. So the next class day, I looked Maury up, didn't tell him his mother had called me, and I got next to him as she suggested. He wrote me a term paper which would be worth publishing, The Influence of the Jewish Philosopher Maimonides on Thomas Aquinas. A fine piece of research. He finally got a B in the course. But most of my classes have been in Catholicism. I have been teaching courses in what we call the fundamentals of Catholic theology, where my largest single section was 102 students, where the normal teaching load is 40 students. We used the largest lecture halls available and brought in extra seats. I have been teaching each semester a course in morals and marriage, which I tell the students on the first day are not disjunctive terms. You can be married and remain moral. And this past semester, we had too many students for one section, so I took on another brand new section, unannounced, filled it with the excess of registration from the first section. courses in the New Testament where most of the students are Protestants. One of the finest courses, from my viewpoint, that I've ever taught in St. Augustine. And I was just telling one of the sisters yesterday, after years of teaching theology, I had to come to a state university to teach a course in St. Augustine. I got a letter yesterday from one of my students. A girl said, the finest course I ever got from you, and she's taken a lot of my courses, was St. Augustine. Among my students have been many Protestants. I always have some ministers. Currently, I'm directing a master's thesis of all things on 16th century mystics. The writer of the thesis is the Reverend Burns Seeley, an Episcopal pastor. The administration has been uniformly cooperative, way beyond the call of duty. They have given me, for example, private offices. In fact, one year when I was besieged by students in one place, they gave me two offices. Complete freedom to teach what I want as I want to. I put together a 300-page, single-spaced textbook in morals which the university sells to the bookstore and gives me the profit. It's not much, but it's substantial. I have found through being on the university, and this is often mentioned, what can one person do? Well, Lord knows I'm not that consequential. But just being there, you become a symbol of much more than just your own classes. As I've been told more than once, for the first time I have discovered that Catholicism is intellectually respectable. Among my students have been some of the finest minds I've ever met, in or outside the Society of Jesus. And most of our people have at least a normal IQ. Among the most unusual and most brilliant was a young man whose ancestry will never be known because he doesn't know it himself. He was a product of the Nazi race farms. You ever hear about that? Where they procreated children where nobody knew who was whose father or mother, where they mated the best men with the best women. Intellectually and otherwise, this young man was a product of one of those procreations, was then released from Germany when the Americans took over. Everything has been forged for him. By the way, I should say this lecture, although I think it is being taped, will not be released. This young man, brilliant mind, not a Catholic, and after a semester in my course, decided to join the Methodist ministry to share, as he said, with others, the faith that I gave him. I am quoting this. We've had dialogues. My last full year was that we had four dialogues going each month. One a week. Catholics, the Lutherans, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and the Reformed. These dialogues were normally at the homes of one of the faculty or my own apartment. I have an apartment off campus. The largest group we had was 52 one evening, filled every available space. At the university, with a large office that I had, I stocked myself with a lot of books, which I bought, a lot of paperbacks, over 1,000 of them, because as the provincial told me, we're not in it for money. We want to do as much good as we can, find out what the lay of the land is. These students, I had them accession the books. The students came in, I would assign reading reports. They'd come in, check the books, I'd make suggestions. Every 6 weeks, reading reports were due. Nothing about the book, just to tell me what they read and how much they read. I would say the average of my students would be about 700 to 1,000 pages a semester, all reading outside and beyond the course. Term papers were required of all the students. 10-page minimum, double space, and always a carbon or a photostat. They told them, if you get to make a carbon, or you don't know how, photostat your ribbon copy. Most of those term papers I encourage the students to make autobiographical. I think to read 10 of those papers would change the attitude of almost any teacher who has spent a lifetime teaching in Catholic schools. Sometimes they're marked on top, confidential. Sometimes the last paragraph is one young man this past semester as I was going over the papers. When you read this, give me the grade and burn it. Things they tell you, they've told nobody else. The most intimate details of their past life, literal, detailed confessions, complete exposure of their whole interior life, their sufferings and trials and conflicts and challenges. Anyone with an ounce of faith or shred of charity, your heart melts. I have taught in my 3 years over 1,500 students, all registered, all for credit. And of course, besides the regular program at the university, to illustrate, in other words, the effectiveness of a person being on campus, there have been all kinds of other involvements in the regular running of the institution. Thus, for a year, I served on what was called the Discipline Committee, which is a misnomer. It looks worse than it really was, with the three deans of men, women, and the university, and the head of the psychology department. We met every week on Mondays for about an hour and a half to discuss the philosophy of discipline. That's a new one. The philosophy of discipline at the university. And I was commissioned by the committee to write the principles that are to guide that university for the future years of its existence. Spelling out the principles of the natural law in such detail as, of course, would be possible only with such a mixed and heterogeneous student body. It means that, as you can imagine, over the years, you were invited to speak. My only problem was turning down invitations. I averaged 2 public appearances a week. It means also that you got involved in the students' lives. Because besides the teaching, which was normal, 15 hours I taught for a year and a half, 12 hours normally, you had conferences with the students. When I first came there, I made inquiries of the departments about how many hours should I give the students, say, per week in the office. In other words, how many hours should I be available? Well, they told me 2, 3, 4 hours a week. That's plenty. They stopped coming, you stopped coming. Well, I found out that that was impossible. In fact, immediately I thought to myself, that can't be enough. So I started with 2 hours a day. I ended up with 6, 7, and more hours each day in the office. Seldom could I get to bed before midnight until the provincial had a right to me to tell me to get more sleep. Somebody told him, I don't know who. Along with the involvement in the university was, of course, involvement in other institutions and agencies connected with the university. I think I mentioned a series of lectures to the Kalamazoo Medical Association. They are currently running a story on the university and specifically on the department and yours truly in what is called the Kalamazoo Magazine. And among the young men, there are two people that I am specially proud of, although I'm proud of all of them. Among the young men that I taught was a man who is now finishing his graduate work in theology, master's degree, at Notre Dame University. You heard about the Upjohn Pharmaceuticals. His family, his own immediate family, so I've been told, is worth $40 million. This young man, from a completely Protestant background, became a Catholic. He is so sold on what he discovered, he wants to share it with others. He wants to teach in a Catholic college. And the young women, the Susie Dick that I tell you about her, Susie, who is finishing at Northwestern University with a doctorate, an almost daily communicant, from a perfect agnostic. The change you see in a matter of weeks, certainly of months, in a whole generation of people who are hungry for the things that we've got, and all too often, as I think you will bear me out, our own Catholic students, or those who have been exposed to Catholicism for so many years, are so terribly complacent about, smug about, sometimes almost dare you to teach them anymore. To come into this atmosphere, and the only description for it is a spiritually hungry generation, which I don't know all the answers. In fact, I don't know any of them. I only know what I have discovered and what my own superiors have allowed me to be exposed to, as they told me, to share with others. Let us at least pray for the future. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, amen. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. O Mary, conceived without sin. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, amen.